The wheel of time turns, and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. In one podcast, called The Lorehounds by Some, a weekly recap with tons of analysis, two Wheel of Time superfans will lead you through a world of powerful magic, tricky prophecies, and cutthroat politics. Join me, John, and my co-host Alicia for weekly coverage of Season 3 by searching your podcast app for The Lorehounds. Dovyandi sitovas again. It's time to roll the dice.
Sometimes it feels like the world is moving at hyperspeed and you can't keep up because it's one thing, then another, and don't forget the meeting and the yoga class and the dinner reservation, but then you get into the all-new Nissan Murano and you feel the breeze from the panoramic moonroof while the massaging seats melt away the tension of the day. And you realize that sometimes the greatest rush is not rushing at all. Shop the all-new Murano at NissanUSA.com. Panoramic moonroof massaging leather appointed seats are available features.
Welcome to the House of the Hounds. We're the Lorehounds, your guides to the Dance of the Dragons. I'm John.
And I'm David, and this is our coverage for Season 1, Episodes 7 and 8, titled Driftmark and the Lord of the Tides, of the HBO Max original series House of the Dragon.
Today we'll be giving our hot takes before diving into a deeper discussion of the episodes, and then we will take some ravens from our listeners and answer them.
Please do send us your ravens. We love to hear your thoughts and reactions. Send those to hotd@thelorehounds.com, or head over to our contact page on our website. And there you can also send a raven using the little, I'm using the send raven thing too much. Just send us a message on the contact form or record us a voicemail like Dork of the Ninjas did today, and we can drop that right into the podcast.
Support the community on Supercast or Patreon. Join the Discord to have a lovely conversation with everyone, or take a listen to our affiliate podcast. You can find links to all of that in the show notes. Now we have a new link tree, so you click one link, takes you everywhere. It's very exciting.
It's very fancy. John, we've spent a lot of time the last few episodes pitching the show guide and the seasons pass. Mm-hmm. They are great things. The show guide is an extensive online encyclopedia that is spoiler-free for season two, where you get like
it's spoiled. Current with the show.
Yeah, exactly. And seasons, the season pass is where you can pay a one-time flat fee, have access to not only the show guide, which the patron and some Supercast subscribers already get, but you do a one-time fee, you get access to all of our season one pre-coverage or post-coverage or recap coverage, and all of our season two podcasts. Just $10. You get all that good stuff. You have it forever.
Mm-hmm. And ad-free, early, all that jazz.
Exactly. And that way, if you're not into the, I don't want to do another Patreon thing, boom, flat box, $10, and you're done for all of season one and season two with the auxiliary information. I even got a message today from Two Kids, Two Dogs on our Discord, and Nancy M., who's one of our lore masters, and she was like, oh, I just finished reading this big book on all of the stuff, and I want to write this article. I've got a bunch of stuff I want to say. And I was like, boom, yeah, well, that would definitely put something in the show guide for that kind of user-generated material. So there's going to be a lot of really cool stuff that's available for subscribers this season.
I'm even updating the show guide right now because there is an insane spelling of deceased in one of the guides.
See, there you go. Real time. Hot fixes. Hot fixes true. With your hot takes.
All right. So enough salesmanship.
Enough salesmanship.
I think that we can move on here. You know, everywhere you go, someone's trying to convince you to be Lord of the Tides. And
nickel and dime,
who knows if you can, who knows if you'll be able to take them up on it.
Who knows if you'll be able to keep your head through those negotiations.
It's true. So speaking of these negotiations and whatnot, again, we're going to, I think, talk spoilers for the full first season, but nothing beyond that. Nothing with the book spoilers or anything like that.
Right.
What did you think of these episodes, David?
I think episode 7 is probably one of the best episodes of television that I've ever watched. And I've watched a lot of television. And that episode, just the tone, the pacing, the construction. Yeah, I know there's some, cinematography issues with the darkness, and you can really see how they were trying to crank it up in post-production when, when they're on the beach and stuff. But just what that episode does to develop all of this tension and animosity and friction and character complexities. I was just enraptured. I was on the edge of my, well, I don't know. I was on the edge of my seat. I was in bed watching on my laptop, but I was just gripped and completely focused. I didn't think about my phone. I didn't think about second screen. Nothing. I was just in the story the entire time. And it's just really phenomenal. And I enjoyed how it made me start to think about the overall arc of season one, how they constructed it. And I find it really interesting the way that we just did a natural progression, 1 and 2, 3 and 4, 5 and 6, right? Just to divvy it up evenly in a preseason. But they all really work together as a brace of episodes for each one. Mm-hmm. And then that made me think, God, how did they do that? Because 7 and 8 really go together. 9 and 10 really go together, right? They created some, intentionally or unintentionally, some sort of internal harmonics with the episodes.
Yeah.
So that they just resonate with each other. It's like sympathetic vibration, right? You ding this one over here and then they all sort of ring through. And I'm just really impressed at how they built that particular episode and pushed the characters and stories. Really exquisite. Mm-hmm. What'd you think? Enough gushing from me.
Well, it's funny because I think that I feel the same way about the second episode.
Number 2.
Watching it and I, right, exactly. Episode 8. That has
episode 8, not episode 2. Right. Okay.
We're talking about episodes 7 and 8. So the second episode we watched, a second copy of the second will. If you watch the Grand Budapest Hotel, you'll get that joke. The point is, I really liked the episode where the whole legitimacy of Rhaenyra's children is questioned.
Yep.
You have this whole thing with Vaemond, but really, I think the scene that really sold it for me just. God bless Paddy Considine.
Oh man,
him this coming in
performance.
Him coming in, I couldn't believe how riveted I was by a man walking slowly across a room,
painfully, slowly, ever so painful. Yeah,
it's moving. It's so moving, and I couldn't believe how good that was. The dinner scene, the side eyeing was just incredible.
Right.
Everything felt so believable. Everything felt so tragic in the end.
Very tragic.
It felt like everybody wanted. It's almost like if everybody just said their feelings, they would all get along. But instead, they have to resort to insults and this back talking and this sort of speaking out of both sides of their mouth. And they only behave in front of Grandpa Viserys. And it's just a big shame, but they sell it so well.
Yeah.
And they also really sell this comedy of errors idea mm-hmm. of this whole thing. And it's more than the book. The book doesn't have a lot of this stuff. But they do this whole thing with Alicent and misunderstanding the prophecy where you're like, man, if people would have just spoken more clearly earlier on, this could have all been avoided.
Right. Told the truth a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they do such a great job of seeding it too. You know, you have Viserys early in that episode saying, I need to set things right.
Mm-hmm.
And then so later when he's like Aegon, she's like, oh, setting things right by making Aegon heir? Great. it just makes sense. It all makes sense. Like, it's believable. It's absolutely believable. And it makes it for such a compelling conflict leading into season 2.
Right. It's interesting because I was catching myself second screening a little bit more in 9, and I couldn't figure out why, and I still don't know why, because I see everything you're saying about 9. I'm nodding my head. I'm like, mm-hmm, yeah, that's true, yeah, right. But for some reason, 8 just grabbed me more than 9, and maybe that's just a personal preference thing, because 9 is as packed, it's more packed than 8. It has more resolution and outcome, more setup and resolution, where 8 is really just constant tension building and there's very little resolution. Where seven and eight is a lot of resolution, where there's a lot of outcomes that we get to. So it's interesting, but yeah, really an amazing pair of episodes. And Paddy Considine, man, did he ever get a nominated for any awards for this? Because
ooh, good question. Let's
really
find
should.
Out. Paddy really Considine. Yeah, so I checked and he did not get any awards or even nominations for this season. And it's kind of shocking. He has plenty of other awards. It's just not for this. And Matt Smith got nominations, Millie Alcock, a bunch of other people. I don't understand why he didn't, because to me, he was the standout of this whole season.
Completely. And given that he's not carrying forward in any future seasons.
Right, right.
You know why? Okay, Matt Damon did a great job. Amazing. I don't think it was
Matt Damon.
Award. Sorry.
Who was he?
Not in this. How do you
do
like
you
them
you like dragons? Well, how do you like them
you
dragons?
Like them dragons. My brain's a little scrambled today. Long day. What is his name?
God. Matt Smith.
Thank you. God. Matt Smith. What? It wasn't an award-winning performance. It was an amazing performance, a great performance, but I don't think it comes near to what Paddy Considine did.
Yeah, I think they're different, but yeah, Paddy Considine wins it out for me. Millie Alcock, I'll say breakout role. I think she deserved a bunch of awards too.
Sure. The one person I was going to shout out, especially during episode 8, was Eve Best.
Oh yeah,
Rhaenyra Targaryen. There was just some incredible scenes with her, and the gravity and the control. The outer display of kind of world weariness, and I've seen this before, and look, I've had my hopes and dreams crushed and I'm fine with that, but yet with this inner steel, this inner resolve, and a very deadly political player, like that's a really complex package, and she just carries it off without effort. She's a real giant of an actor.
And she never shows her cards to anyone, even the audience, which is great. But not in a boring way, not in an I'm not emoting way, in a mysterious way, in a way that makes me go, I don't know your next move.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Especially with 8 and the negotiations before the petitions happen. You're like, which way are you gonna go? And then she changes up again, even during the audience hall scene.
Yeah. She does. Although, did she even change? Because the question is, did she come there to advocate for Rhaenyra or not?
Well, we'll have to wait till we get to that scene and to talk about it. Yes, we're still at the beginning.
I don't know if she ever actually changed her mind. I think she might have just kept silent long enough to make Rhaenyra negotiate against herself.
I don't know about that. I don't know. Let's talk about it later. Let's talk about it later.
All right. Well, why don't we get into the full episode then? I will tell you, David, before we go into the full episode, I got a little addicted to Hot D over the last week. And I did
I don't know if you want to be admitting that on the podcast.
You know what I mean. House of the Dragon. Yeah, clip that soundbite. Anyway, I read pretty much the whole story in the book. So I will be our book reader for this season.
Okay.
I will not spoil anything. All I can say is I am very hype for season 2 because I think most of the big moments are ahead of us.
Okay.
Which is crazy because this season felt so great.
And monumental. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But like this whole season was basically the prequel to all the big stuff.
Right. And I think I remember people talking about that. This was just a giant season of table setting. Monumental, you know, stuff going on in it. This is the amuse-bouche to the actual meal that's coming to us.
Yeah, agreed. All right, let's go into the episode. Episode 7, titled Driftmark. We've got Lena Valerian has died, and the extended royal family has come together to mourn her on Driftmark.
All of this just this entire scene, I think it's, I was trying to mark the amount of time, but at least 10 to 12 minutes of this episode, there's barely a word spoken. Mm-hmm. There is some dialogue here and there, but it's very, in a plot way, it's very mechanical. It's just kind of getting certain people, and it would be weird for somebody to not to say something to somebody else in this position, right, or what have you. But most of the beginning of this episode is without dialogue. And mm-hmm. that is incredible. And you just feel every side eye. You feel every positioning. Like, I'm on this side of the room looking over there, and I'm clocking that person talking to this person. And now I'm over here. And then this person's looking at me, and now I'm like side eyeing them back. It was just absolutely a masterclass in filming and editing. Yeah, it's a little bit dark, whatever. The way that the characters are expressed, and I think that's why I was so high on this episode, is this first 10 minutes or so.
Do you know, I was trying to search on the discourse of what it was, what people were saying about this episode, that the visuals when it came out.
Oh, from back when?
Yeah, when it came out. And the Max helpline, the HBO helpline at the time, had to tweet out, "Hey there, we appreciate you reaching out about a night scene in House of the Dragon, episode 7, appearing dark on your screen. The dim lighting of this scene was an intentional creative decision. Thanks."
That's hilarious.
They had enough people reaching out, like, "I think something's broken with your streamer."
Right. That's great.
And I do think this is several levels too dark for me. And
agreed.
There's some bizarre stuff, like, because, you know, they shot this in the day and used lenses. Right. You have people squinting at the sun, but it's nighttime in the show. I just think it was a really weird decision. They just should have done a few night shoots.
Right.
I don't understand why they did it this way, because it's not like they got a clearer picture with the lighting.
Right.
No, I'm going to make this a big complaint. This is a big complaint about this episode for me, because wow. it really does reduce my ability to see facial expressions. It makes me a little confused when I see a sky that's clearly like clouds and sunny, but it's dimly colored. It's just
they used to do that in the old days. They would just slap a bunch of gel on the front.
Well, we're not in the old days, David.
We have
2022 at the time.
We have cameras that are smarter than the computers that they used to land the lunar module, you know, back in the early mm-hmm. space race days. You know, the cameras are more smarter than those computers. So I agree with you. I think, you know, who knows what happened with production. It's interesting, though, because did you do a rewatch on a television or on a laptop? I watched on my laptop.
I did it on an iPad, actually.
Okay, interesting. Because I was on my laptop and I was fine. The only time I had problem was when Rhaenyra and Daemon were at the end of the scene where they were in that, whatever, that driftwood structure, that hulk of an old ship mm-hmm. or whatever that they were in.
Well, but
it was when they were on the beach talking, and I could really see them cranking mm-hmm. up the exposure on Rhaenyra, and it was anyway, well, it wasn't a thing to me.
I watched it originally when I watched it as it came out on an OLED screen in complete darkness. If there was ever a time that this would have worked, it would have been on that, and it did not. It did not work for me. So I'm not going to complain about the darkness anymore. It's going to be exhausting if I bring it up all night, but I need to say up front, that was a stupid decision. They shouldn't do it again.
Fair enough.
Done. All right. Something that breaks my heart in this whole scene is Lucerys being approached by Corlys. Corlys goes, "Oh, you're going to be the Lord of the Tides one day. You're going to be the heir to Driftmark."
Right.
And he's like, "If I'm Lord of Driftmark, everyone's dead."
Yeah.
And it's something you don't really consider with being an heir, right? It's Rhaenyra wants to be heir so badly, but that means that everyone else is dead.
Yeah. And it goes to the sensitivity of Lucerys and Jacerys and Joffrey, that they just have a different temperament to them. Where
one might say they're strong.
Certainly someone does comment about that a little bit later, but that they are different from their uncles and from Aemond and what's his brother's name?
Aemond and Aegon?
Yes, Aegon. Thank you. And what is it about the essential nature of people and children where we just have this tone or a vibe that's just with us, and that's part of where did it come from and how does it evolve over time? That's a lot of thought and debate about that, but the kids are just different sets of kids, and Aemond and Aegon are, they just have a different kind of nastiness to them, you know?
Well, I think, quite honestly, what something I would pin it on is Aemond and Aegon did not have a present father. Like, their father was sick at times and really just kind of aloof. Like, he wasn't a great dad to Rhaenyra either.
Sure, yeah.
He just kind of, and Aegon also has this thing where he would have been heir, but for his dad changing precedent and giving it to his sister.
Right.
Then you have the Valyrians, who have two dads and a mother who seems to spend a lot of time with them, right? Like, she and then they're gonna have a good relationship with them.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they're going to have a stepdad. And that's so different from, you know, the kids who just have, like, imagine having Allison as a mom. That sounds fucking terrible. It just sounds like you will do anything to escape the rules at that point. You know what I mean? Like, she probably held them on such a tight leash that she didn't know what to do with, that they didn't know what to do with themselves. That's why they became such monsters.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But I can't even blame her, because she's at least there, and Viserys is just fucking off to drink wine and pretend to be king.
Viserys, yeah. So this is where the show, I think, does a lot of great work in the fact that there's no way I can understand what it would be like to be a major noble of the Seven Kingdoms and of Planetos, right? Like, I have no idea what it would be like to be that. But I can understand a parent-child relationship. And I can understand it, you know, in all these different permutations and all these different parenting styles and forms of communication. I can see the truth of the relationships, regardless of the circumstances, the fact that these are, you know, noble houses with long lineages. There's a great scene, I think, is it in 8, where they're at the end of dinner and Rhaenyra turns to her kids and she's just like, okay, kids, you know, bedtime, everybody off you go. And it's like, wait a minute, these are the princes of the realm and you're literally telling them to go to bed.
Yeah.
And I was like, as a parent with, you know, and with in groups of other parents and with family who have, you know, are also parents. And when we as a collective adults go, right, it's over, everybody, time to go.
Yep.
That rings so true. And I think that's where this show shines a lot, is because it's dealing with the essentials of human nature. Mm-hmm. It's dealing with the essentials of, well, you know, I'm born gay and my world says I can't be that. So I've got to live this semi-lie and not be out about it. And then, like, my kids are not my biological kids, but I'm their legal. Like, these are all very real situations that we are dealing with today.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what the show carries so much resonance, because they're just dealing with people.
Right. Well, let's move on to another conversation during the, go ahead.
Yes. I guess, are we still talking about the wake situation here?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to bring in another element though.
Okay. Because I did want to say, there was one thing about when Lucerys walks up to his cousins, Rhaena, and who's the other?
Bela?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes his hand, and there's this, like, tender moment, and you can see that there's real genuine and affection there, and just watching these kids struggling with this pain and this loss and, like, all of this stuff going on. It was another really tender and very human moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the Valyrians, you're right, they have a really high EQ compared to their uncles. I keep forgetting that they're not cousins, they're uncles.
Right. I know. I almost made that mistake too.
So just to bring in another lovely conversation,
yeah.
Viserys extends an olive branch to Daemon. Daemon then extends his olive branch for Rhaenyra.
I'm trying to remember. Say a little bit more about this scene, because there's so much in this scene. This is when Viserys tells him to come home.
Yeah, he's like, "Come on, you know, let's set it aside. Come back."
Oh, that's right. And he says, "My home is in Pentos now."
Yeah,
right.
He denies it, and then you totally missed my second joke, or you didn't care. Daemon extends his olive branch for Rhaenyra.
I got it now. I was being very serious about the topic, and your humor was just too subtle for me.
Well.
It's like the picture of Damon that you have on the show tracker.
Oh yeah, the show tracker. You just saw that?
No, I saw it a while ago, but I just thought it was a good point to bring it up now because of your subtle humor.
Put the there's a few little jokes hidden in the show tracker.
Yes, as you will, as you are wont to.
If you click on the picture of Vaemon Valerian, you'll see the cover photo is him with his head half chopped off.
Yeah. It's pretty funny.
Anyway, a lot of fun stuff like that. I think I put one of Kristen Cole's other aliases as Crispin too. There's some fun times in there. Anyway, point is, Viserys is trying to get Daemon back in court, and Daemon's like, no. But then, of course, guess who lures him in? Rhaenyra. Mm-hmm. What do you think about them getting together finally? I need you, uncle. What a weird thing to propose marriage to your uncle by calling him uncle. I mean, the whole thing's weird, but she's like, come on, I need you, uncle. What?
Yep. But, you know, that's what they're doing. And it seems to be the one relationship that she has that works in all aspects. You know, they have respect for each other. They can trust each other implicitly. There's some chemistry. There's some physical attraction between them, obviously.
Well, for now, as of this episode, I guess she can trust him. But remember, there's some stuff in episode 10.
I do not remember.
That makes you go,
don't spoil me.
That's fine. That's fine. I don't want to praise Daemon to the high heavens here.
No. But certainly up until whatever that point is, which I can't remember. The only thing I can really remember about the 10 is the big dramatic scene at the Sept and then like the twins. I just remember the two Kingsguard twins. Everybody was like, that was like a really big point of conversation throughout the last two episodes.
Yeah, I only have them separated because I did the show guide. Like, right. That's it. So let's go on to Rhaenys and Corlys. They have a frank conversation. Rhaenys suggests that they pass Driftmark's title through Lena's line to Baela due to the lack of Valyrian blood in Lucerys. Corlys emphasizes that history remembers names, not blood. And I just want to say,
yes, this is one of your big lines.
Steve Toussaint, I think that's how you say his name.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
He is like such a good speaker. His voice is an earworm for me. He has such a great voice.
And he's just such a commanding presence, and with that stock of hair, and he really does. You really do feel like the natural leadership that he has, and this fire and this drive as a second son to always be striving. And I love. And I remember, what was it, a couple of podcasts ago, or maybe it was the last one, where you were like, "This is the line."
This is his whole driving mission. Blood.
Yeah. And Rhaenys is like, dude, I'm over it. He's like, but I'm trying to be your man. And she's like, no, you're not. I'm over it. It's clearly just your ego that's driving this, because I do not feel in any way like you're upholding me or trying to forward my claims.
Right. And like, this is all you, buddy.
It was a very tense moment in this very fraught situation all in all, because they're in a very precarious position. You know, as much power as they have, it's also very precarious in a lot of ways.
Yeah. But I mean, I see both of their points, right? Like,
yes.
I don't think that necessarily biological parentage matters much to who your kids are. You know, there's plenty of ways to make a family, but in this world, obviously that matters in terms of inheritance and whatnot. So, and really Corlys is keeping the peace by not rejecting Lucerys as his grandson.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, Rhaenys has a good point. This is a great opportunity. He could absolutely just be like, you know, in honor of Lena, we want this to pass to Baela and Rhaena. Too many.
I really do need the show guide to keep track of all of these people.
Yeah. But anyway, it was the opportunity. That was the moment where you could plausibly, you know, with plausible deniability, do it without calling into question the legitimacy of the Valerian kids,
right,
of Lenor's kids.
Right. There's this point that Luke just hasn't had any experience being in charge of a naval fleet. You know, he's just not, you know, why isn't he spending time on Driftmark? I looked at a map after a couple of podcasts ago. You were like, no, they're right next to each other. I had no idea that Driftmark was right next to Dragonstone. They're like literally across a small strait from
each other. They could like wave to each other.
They
it's
really
like Russia
could.
And Alaska.
So why the hell? Why the hell is it Luke?
I could see Driftmark from my porch. All right.
Why isn't Luke there all the time learning what he needs to learn to become, you know, the head of that household? It just boggles my mind. I don't know what they're doing sometimes. You know, you there is a lot of responsibility in these kids placed on him. And just like Aegon says at one point in 8, I didn't ask for this. You know, and it's like, no, you didn't. But this is what you got to deal with.
Right. Also, can I add, Luke is a dragon rider. He absolutely could just fly right over there anytime he
exactly,
wanted.
Right? Hey, Mom, I'm going to go play with my cousins and learn some shipwright stuff, you know.
And now they're going to be betrothed, so they better be going back and forth.
Exactly.
All right. Aemon decides to claim Vhagar as his own. When the Valyrians see him riding her, they get into a physical altercation. Lucerys slashes Aemon's eye, making him permanently blind in that eye. In the aftermath, Viserys learns that the cause of the attack was Aemon calling the Valyrians bastards. And the king decrees that any utterance of this lie will cause the owner of the lie to lose their tongue. Alicent is unsatisfied with this outcome and attempts to take Lucerys' eye. She is stopped by Rhaenyra, who she injures.
This is just an amazing culmination of tension and drama, all the way from Aemon deciding to, you know, screw up his courage to go and climb on the back of Vhagar. And I have to say, it was pretty good. They did a pretty good job with the CGI and the practical effects and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand the dragon rider saddle. Like, why aren't you strapped in by a whole other, like, he's like hanging free.
Well, okay. So this
I know he just hopped up and it took off.
Yeah. This is a conversation I had with my wife last night when we were watching this together. And this, I think the idea is that you're supposed to be strapped in. He's just getting on. And then Vhagar's like, I'm going.
He and just you got to hold control. On at that point. You cannot let go to try to get a strap on or anything.
Because it's a thing that, like, you can get really injured if you're not strapped in. And so they want to be.
Yeah, especially those high G, you know, like a quick turn. Yeah, mm-hmm. You get slammed around. And the show, I got a really good sense of vertigo of when Vhagar is diving. And I was like, oh, man, this is like any kind of roller coaster that I've ever been on in my life. This is that times 100.
Right. Yeah. And I do know that in the books, they specifically mention people being strapped in.
Yeah.
Right. So you're not supposed to be like Aemon here, but I will compliment the show that they made me root for Aemon because I didn't know what was going to happen with him. You know, he gets bullied about the pig and he doesn't have a dragon and this and that. And it really made me root for Aemon to really, you know, claim this dragon and become a dragon rider. I think that was something that he needed to do for his development. Of course, later he becomes kind of the worst, but it takes a while for him to get there.
Yeah. And it takes a lot of courage at that age to get on is this the biggest dragon in the realm, I think, right?
Yeah, so Beleriand was bigger, but Beleriand's dead. So this is now the biggest dragon alive. It's also the last dragon to have seen old Valyria.
Right. And I think they do a really great job with the CGI, just giving that sense of age and size and, you know, running takeoff and everything. It was a really great scene. And then to go from that scale down to a group of children fighting in the caves and, you know, it didn't feel, even though we went down in size, the stakes felt as high as they were when Aegon was riding the dragon.
Oh yeah, the knives come out. It's not great. It's not great, everyone.
Sorry, did I say Aegon? I meant
Aemon is the one who gets slashed. Yeah,
yeah.
Don't worry. There's another Aegon coming next episode.
That's right. So going into this smaller scale, and the stakes are just as high, and it's just intense. And then we roll into the scene where all these parents, and the parents are pissed, right? They're rolling up. They're like, "What did you not do to calm me the moment you rousted my child? Once you laid hands on my child, if you didn't tell me within 5 seconds, like this is a problem. I have I have words for you." Let alone for my child and whatever else is going on. It just felt very real in terms of a family squabble.
But also nobody really takes a minute to be like, okay, what happened here, until Viserys finally puts his foot down.
Right.
And this was actually, for a minute, I'm like, is he actually going to do something? Is he actually going to resolve a conflict? And of course he goes,
he doesn't.
Okay, the solution is nobody ever talk about this again.
Right.
Which has always been super effective at resolving family conflicts.
And what is he like? Basically, make your peace, and then we don't talk about it. Yeah, we're done.
Mm-hmm. Kiss and make up.
Yeah, Alicent is not having it. And I remember when first watching season one, and then even now when she grabs the cat's paw, and that sound of the knife coming out of the scabbard, it's just so distinctive. And I felt like in that moment, anything could have happened. Mm-hmm. And then the whole thing with Kristen Cole stepping up, and then the other Kingsguards restrain him, and the whole thing, like you just—
Well, Kristen refuses to attack Lucerys.
Right, but then at some point, as he refuses to attack Lucerys, but then when Alicent pulls the dagger, he goes in, he's going in to defend her. Mm. And then they grab him. So he's restrained while Alicent is, menacing Rhaenyra.
Hmm.
Yeah. So it's like the point is that the whole situation is just a pot ready to boil over. And in one little thing, and it happened, right? She cut her arm, which seems to have released the tension because something actually happened. But I mean, she could have easily stabbed her or anybody else in the struggle. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it relieved the tension, but it embarrassed her enough for her to be like, oh fuck, what did I do?
Yeah, right.
It sobered her up.
Exactly. That's what I mean by the fact that she was like, oh, whoa, what am I actually doing here? What am I actually doing here?
And of course, because Rhaenyra rubs it in and says, now they see you as you are.
That was such a juicy line, right? Just dripping.
I think that's right, though. There's lot of violence in the way that Alicent does the poor me thing. And in a lot of ways, she has been really tossed around, right? I mean, Viserys, she was basically groomed to, seduce the king. At a very young age, her friend really wasn't very good to her. Her dad is very weird to her and groomy and manipulative. And she's just never really had a friend, which is why, Laris is able to sneak his way in at the end of this episode.
Right, right. But she has a very, I still can't find the word that I was thinking of the other week. Just her arrogance is just so, it's so much. And the conversation, we'll get to it here in a minute, I guess, with the conversation between her and her father.
Mm-hmm.
But these three scenes together, the dragon riding, the kids fighting, and then this family squabble, just so much drama and so much character development and the hurts and the insults and the I can't believe you would have or said that you did this, and like, oh my God, it really packs so much gunpowder into the keg that is going to explode.
Yeah, and of course the Franz Ferdinand incident will happen in, I guess there's two Franz Ferdinand incidents, kind of. It's Viserys dying, and then it's something else at the end of the season.
Right, right.
All right, let's move on to Laenor. Laenor tells Rhaenyra his lover, Karl Kory, is going back to the Stepstones, and Laenor will be recommitting himself to Rhaenyra. He laments his sexuality, but Rhaenyra reassures him that he's a good man. Daemon orchestrates the staged killing of Laenor by Karl Kory, allowing the couple to escape to Essos for anonymity.
There you go. I forgot until the end of the scene or till the end of the episode when Laenor is rowing out. I had forgotten that this was how this resolved. So I was delighted and surprised. I was like, oh yeah, that's right. You know,
happy ever after.
Happy. But then the beauty of it is that Rhaenyra and Rhaenys, who should be natural allies in so many ways, have one more hurt, mm-hmm. one more place of angst and anger and frustration and, you know, and suspicion and all of this stuff between them, right? That's keeping them apart, even though they should be. Because if those two ever teamed up, damn. Right, they could take on the entire realm.
I mean, they do team up this season,
right? I'm you know, but I if they were actually in sympathy, like
in full
exactly.
alignment, okay,
in full alignment.
Yeah, and I really love this Laenor change because, you know, this was not in the book. This was something added for the show. In the book, because it's an internal history and it's supposed to be the Maesters retelling, they're like, oh yeah, so Laenor died under, mm-hmm. I think basically under mysterious circumstances. Everyone thought Daemon did it, something like that. There's no mention of his escape, which means it worked.
You're right.
Right? Like the realm thought he died. Super
and
cool.
It's a great setup. And I think this really shows Daemon's cunning in these kinds of he's certainly done it enough that he has experience. He has the experience and skill enough to be able to pull something like this off.
Right. And of course he puts on his murder cloak. For
yes.
This. I always loved everyone was talking about his murder cloak in season one. Why does he wear the same cloak every time he does something murdery?
Signaling to us. And something we didn't talk about too was not only the scene on the beach with Daemon and Rhaenyra and how they edited and cut all of that together, but then when they're plotting the scheme and he proposes this idea, when Daemon proposes this idea to her, she's like, oh. Then they'll fear what else we are potentially capable of. And this is like the game of shadows that's playing, mm-hmm. being played out, right? And she gets it, and Daemon's like, mm-hmm. And it's kind of a Wonder Twin Powers unite moment where they really begin to operate as a couple. And they really – this is their first caper. This is their first little thing that they pull off as a team. And it's effective. And she's willing to suffer or to have to deal with Rhaenys's anger and resentment that's going to, you know, occur towards her. But she's like, oh well, that's the game that we're playing, and so I'll just have to manage that for what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really sad what happens in this whole thing because you do see the devastation of both parents here.
Completely, right?
You know, this is not a victimless crime.
Mm-hmm. Even though there's no actual, right, except for the poor bastard.
Yeah, again, there is a death. we're glossing over it, but Daemon did straight up murder another guy.
He did, that's
a random
right.
guy just because he happened to kind of a little bit resemble.
And I thought he was just like
the waist down at least.
I thought he was like the guard that he was clearing the way for, you know, for Carl to get in. But nope, this was the bodyguard.
No, he's just a random servant.
Random dude. Nobody's going to miss him, right?
It's really weird that Gerald didn't show up for work today, isn't it? The same day, Laenor?
Yeah.
Oh, it's silly. It's silly, but it's sad.
And I think you make a really good point, which is Rhaenyra is a parent, so she can sympathize and... Rhaenys is like, that's my last kid.
It is Rhaenys, by the way, before
Rhaenys.
Somebody writes in.
Yeah. That's my last kid, right? And if I even suspect that you had a hint of an idea of a half of a thought that you were involved, F you, right? The biggest F you's at you. So it's brutal. And Rhaenyra can't ever tell her the truth of, you know, the truth of what this was.
It will forever be a division with her. And we'll see how that shakes out, I guess. I do want to pour one out for Laenor Velaryon, because it's a lovely conversation he has with Rhaenyra, where he's like, yeah, you know, I want you to have what you deserve. And it just feels like we couldn't ever find happiness while we were doing our duty. So I'm going to choose duty for you. Mm. And Rhaenyra's like, you know what? And I love when he goes, you deserve a husband. Because they really do sell that she's going to have him killed, but she's sad about it. Mm-hmm. But of course, later that's subverted. See, you've subverted my expectations. What she says to him is really beautiful when he's like, I hate the gods. I curse the gods for making me this way. And she's like, I don't. I think that you're a good man. I forgot what else she says, but it's just really nice. And you get the feeling that, and you see this in married couples in the real world, right? Like, maybe they fell out of love, but they are best friends. And they are really, really good friends. And I guess they were never in love, these people. Although I think she loves him in her own way. But they love each other as best friends. They did not love each other romantically. And that's okay. But that doesn't make it... It doesn't mean that she didn't care about him at all.
Right. Right. Yeah. And they found a place where they could be loving with each other. And love each other, in their own ways. Even though it's interesting because the hedonism, I guess you could argue that it was the hedonism that was their downfall in this pursuit of happiness when they're in the great game. They're in the Game of Thrones, right? And you play or you die. And they chose to try to pursue happiness, and that ultimately didn't work out very well. It doesn't work out for anyone very well in this in this set of families.
But of course, at the same time, you have Aegon, who's being way worse than Rhaenyra ever was, and way less honorable than Rhaenyra ever was with her virtue or whatever you want to call it.
Right. Oh, yes.
And yet, he gets a free pass from Alicent. So these episodes do also emphasize Alicent's hypocrisy and the realm's hypocrisy of judging Rhaenyra for having an extramarital affair. Meanwhile, Aegon, if you'll recall from the last couple episodes, has a fighting pit of his own bastards.
Right. I don't remember. Yes, I think doesn't that come, is that next episode?
I think it's next episode. It's episode 9. Yeah. So we'll talk about it when we get there. But my God, is Alicent a hypocrite?
Yeah.
And she, even before that, she knows that he's a rapist. She knows that he's raping servants.
Yep.
And that's
this
awful.
Isn't the first time, right? Yeah.
Right.
This is multiple incidents. And she's powerless to change it. And as a parent, she just doesn't have the skills. We can examine this from our modern lens. Yeah, she wasn't parented. So she's trying to figure out, she has no modeling by which to parent her own children.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times when you hit that frustration wall, it comes out as violence. And when she smacks him in the next episode.
Right. Let's close out the episode. Otto assures Alicent that they have a shot at winning now. Alicent laments her poor behavior, but Otto admires her fight. Larys Strong offers his services to Alicent, and Alicent says, there may come a time when I require such a friend. Daemon and Rhaenyra are married in a small ceremony in front of their children.
So this scene with Otto, I don't want to say that it gave me chills, but it was really affecting, because the way that Rhys Ifans, the actor, is that how you pronounce his name?
I think maybe Ifans, but whatever.
Ifans. He's so subdued most of the time, and he has this sort of weird detached affect for Otto Hightower.
And he's got more schemes than he has stray beard hairs.
He's really looking like he just woke up from a nap, right? But when he's talking to Alicent in the scene, he's enlivened, and you can feel and see the fire in his eyes, and he's actually emoting in a way that we never see him emote. And it's just such a great scene when he has all this really fucked up fatherly pride, right? It's like mm-hmm. he's proud of his daughter for all the wrong reasons, but damn, is he proud. And it's a really amazing turn for both of these characters, right?
So
now that they're going to turn where she was always sort of sailing a different course to him, now they're on the same track.
Except in episode 9, which we'll see. But
yeah, we'll get there.
They do have literally a competition.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree with you though. She's much more in line with him than she ever was, and I think he's more supportive of her than he ever was. I want to ask you, why do you think Laris is so keen to help Alicent?
He likes the cut of her feet.
Fair enough.
He likes her fashion sense with when it comes to shoes.
Yikes.
Yikes is right. It's the second son thing. Didn't we talk about this a little bit? Is it last episode or the one before?
Yeah, we talked about second sons.
Yeah, and he really has that second son thing. And however he comes to his perversion, he comes to his perversion honestly, I guess, he sees the angles, right? He's had to probably play a lot of games in his life because he can't do the physical thing, right? So he's got to constantly be working the angles and the relationships and working in the margins. And he's got a taste for power. Where that taste comes from, who knows, but he sees an angle and he's gonna play it for all it's worth.
To me, I see Laris as someone who wants to find the person he can most easily manipulate.
Mm-hmm.
And for him, Alicent is much easier to manipulate than Rhaenyra would be.
Sure. Or Otto. Or a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's able to prey on Alicent's, I don't want to say character flaws isn't the right word, but he's...
Her insecurities, right?
That's the way to say it.
Her,
yeah.
And he's able to make her feel like she's trapped in the situation with him, making her hands dirty with the whole Harrenhal business.
Right.
And whatnot. So,
but then she sees the power that he can offer her and she takes advantage of that.
Right.
Well, and so he has her even more, mm-hmm. right?
I think the
turn
point
to
is,
me, mm-hmm.
to me, my X-Men. Yes. Yes.
Well, oh, okay. Well, you just watched X-Men. I was thinking more Palpy and.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm in my X-Men move. To me, my X-Men. To me, my high towers. I think Alicent really felt powerless in that situation with Rhaenyra, and she's like, "Well, everyone sees me as a monster now. Maybe I'll
go ahead and
ally a little bit with a monster."
Yeah. Exactly.
All right, one last thing I want to touch on, the Valyrian marriage ceremony. This
yes,
is the first time we've
right.
seen that. What did you think of that?
I thought that was very cool. It'd be interesting to get Marilyn's take on just that scene. So Marilyn, if you're listening to the pod, I would love some ritual, some analysis of these rituals, because mm-hmm. it's very not Seven Kingdoms. This is definitely not a marriage ceremony of the Seven. Mm-hmm. Right, this is the father and the stranger and the mother. None of them were invited. This is old gods. These right. are old Valyrian gods, and it felt very true to what Daemon and Rhaenyra are. What they're bringing about with this marriage. It would have been weird if they didn't have this more ancient ceremony.
Right, right, for sure.
But yeah, the whole thing with the blood and the lips, I was like, oh, don't cut my lip.
Yeah, I hate that idea. A lip cut is the worst.
It's the worst. And I'm sorry, but the palm of your hand is a very sensitive place, and to just slide, mm-hmm. And that's a thing that's a very movie thing. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it was affecting.
Remember The Hangover when Zach Galifianakis does it, and everyone's like, what the hell are you doing?
No, because we actually had that as a blood brother motif, like from my kid days.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it in plenty of other places, but I appreciated
TV
that in
shows.
The Hangover.
Yeah.
All his friends were like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, that's crazy. Don't do that.
Okay, let's take a quick break. When we get back, we'll get back into the episode. We'll be right back with more Hot Tea. And we're back with more House of the Dragon. We're at episode 8 now. 6 years later, a lot of time jumps. 6 years later, Rhaenyra is pregnant with her third child by Daemon. Her father has been getting progressively sicker, causing Otto and Alicent to rule in his stead. The onboarding in these time skips is so good.
Right?
It's so good. I immediately know where we are. I immediately understand how the power dynamics have shifted. It's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. And they don't have, Mary or John exposition coming along and going, oh, hey, you know, here's this completely ridiculous statement that I'm making that I would never say, but I'm really speaking sideways to the camera. They don't treat us that way. They expect us to be sophisticated and to make the assumptions, but they don't try to hide the assumptions that we need to make. They put everything on screen so we can easily deduce what we need, what we're supposed to.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah.
Corlys Velaryon was badly wounded in his battle with the resurgent Triarchy and the Stepstones. With his survival in doubt, Vaemond goes to King's Landing to petition for himself as heir to Driftmark.
Vaemond, he's such an interesting character. I don't know how I emotionally feel about him because there's so much of what he's saying and advocating
he's selfish.
For.
He's selfish and self-interested. And yeah, but I think he's very similar to Corlys in that he's interested in his own legacy.
Mm-hmm.
I think whoever parented these two, I don't know their parents' name, but mom and dad Velaryon were very into, like, be really sure about your legacy. That's the most important thing, because these two are very obsessed with it.
But he's able to couch it in such a way. His delivery is very, it does make you really feel the selfishness, but the actual words he's just saying, I kind of don't disagree in a lot of ways. You know, when he's talking to Rhaenys earlier on, when he's like, look, you know, this is our family, this is our blood, this is, you know, are we really doing this? I can't disagree with the intellectual ideas. In terms of the man, yeah, it's like, okay, yeah, this guy is hungry for power. Another second son, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, he is. He is. And I think Viserys even calls him out on it at some point. He's like, you're a second son.
So is Tywin Lannister is his father? That's what you have in the show guide here.
Where's this?
Yeah, this is on Vaemond.
In Vaemond? We'll delete that because that's wrong.
Yeah, it says parents, Tywin Lannister. Oops, real-time correction.
Must have accidentally hit that at some point.
Yeah, all right.
Anyway,
okay.
So delete that one.
Yeah.
No, that is not his father. Just to be clear, Tywin Lannister is on the council of, the small
accidental.
Council.
Yeah. Yep. And he's got no children? That's interesting. Or we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. So if you ever see like blank on the children or parents or something like that, it's just that it's unknown. Or they might have none, but it's just.
Right. We don't have that. And it's not necessarily important except for like super lore.
Right. So anyway.
Yeah.
He's looking for trouble, let's say. I think he's really looking for trouble. And I don't know what he thought he was going to get out of later, but I want to get there later. Let's get to that.
Right.
Rhaenyra arrives at King's Landing to find her father almost unresponsive on Melkor the Poppy. She laments the division caused by her being named heir and asks her father if he believes in Aegon's dream and if it was true.
So this dream conversation, this is the crux of of the final, I guess, what did you call it? The Franz Ferdinand,
Franz Ferdinand
moment.
The death of Franz Ferdinand.
Exactly. That if, you know, in his dream, in this fever state that he is in, he triggers Alicent with the wrong it's the right information at the wrong time to the wrong person.
Yeah,
literally the wrong person at the wrong time. And I just loved the scene of Daemond and Rhaenyra confronting Alicent when she comes in. It really, you just feel the royalty and this fact, like, it's, they didn't get up and bow to their queen or anything like that. They're just like, yo, like, why, what are you doing to our, to my dad and to my brother? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
It's just, again, another one of those human moments that rings really true, because this is just siblings dealing with aging parents.
Yes. And I also think that if Alicent had not been sidetracked,
mm-hmm.
then she would have not let them see Viserys without her presence.
True, true.
You know, unsupervised. And that's something that she was probably hoping to avoid.
All the more reason to have given them a proper greeting befitting their station when they showed up, because then you could have corralled them where you wanted them to go and manage the situation as you wanted to manage it. Instead, you just left them, you know, free to do what they want. And this is their home as much as it is anybody's. And so, of course, mm-hmm. they're going to go. One of the things I was really struck by, too, in earlier episodes, the Red Keep is just bustling with life. There's servants running around. There's petitioners, people in court. There's just life. There's life happening. And under Viserys's, kingship. But now with Alicent and her move to the Seven and putting up all these different symbols, when Rhaenyra and Daemon are walking through the keep, and they're like, they're looking around. They're like, where is everybody? Like, this is weird. Like, what is that mm-hmm. symbol of the Seven doing up there? The Red Keep is now dead under Otto and Alicent's yep. hand. And it really, again, a great show, don't tell kind of a moment in the show.
It's rough. It's a rough time. And yeah, I think, doesn't Viserys say in an earlier one, like, the Red Keep lost its warmth without Aemma?
I don't remember that line, but that is a good line.
And we didn't talk about it, but he does call Alicent Aemma last episode. So she's
was it
on
last
the line.
Episode?
Okay.
Yeah. I remember it happens.
On episode 7.
Okay. Yeah. And she's just like,
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love how the Lord Commander of the Kingsguard, who I'm going to find the name of right now, Lord. Oh God, who is it? It is Harold Westerling. He goes, yeah, Queen Alicent is really, like, he makes sure to say her name for Viserys mm-hmm. so that he's not embarrassed afterwards. So he corrects himself. Anyway, this is all heartbreaking. And
yeah,
I just want to talk about Daemon pushing forward with everything, like, you need to go reaffirm Lucerys.
Mm-hmm.
And Rhaenyra is like, this is my dad, dude.
Right.
This is sad. And
Daemon when she's talking to him and he comes up and he's just like, yeah, we gotta deal with this. And he's not.
Daemon does eventually get the memo once they get to the throne room, but man, is he kind of callous at first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he's recognizing the late hour, right? The urgency of the situation. Mm-hmm. We don't have a lot of time to diddle about. And I think that's hard when there are real world decisions that need to be made, and the child is trying to deal with the elderly or dying parent, and they're trapped in the emotion of that, not trapped in the emotion, but, you know, that's what's happening right for them right mm-hmm. then. It's like, gosh, my parent is dying. The spouse is like, okay, we gotta call the lawyer. We gotta deal with the, and then that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Nobody ever wants to do the paperwork.
No.
And it's always a problem.
Exactly.
Alicent, of course, is delayed, as we mentioned, in greeting Rhaenyra's family when Sir Eric informs her that that her son Aegon has raped a servant. Alicent swears the serving girl Diana to silence and gives her gold and moon tea. She then kicks Aegon's ass.
Not enough.
Not enough indeed. This guy, you know, if he were out on the town when Daemon was in charge of the Kingsguard, he'd be short a few parts.
So this was definitely Eric.
That was Eric.
Yes, not Eric.
Correct.
Yes.
Eric is the one who eventually goes with Rhaenyra.
Right. And he's got a darker complexion, I think.
So think about motivations here. He's the one who learns about the rape.
Right.
So that lowers his estimation
right.
of Aegon right there and would right. make him more likely to back Rhaenyra.
Right.
Good setup.
And they're starting to dole this stuff out. Oh, and then was it Caswell greets Rhaenyra and Daemon as they mm-hmm. come in, right? And you had called that out earlier. He was the one who paused on the steps to offer her any support that yep. you know she might need.
And he is the one who's going to go down for it later.
Yeah. So great little things that they're seeding earlier on. So, which is always fun on a rewatch to go, oh, that's where they popped in, that, mm-hmm. that thing in. Yeah.
I wonder what we're going to miss next season.
Well, I guess we're just going to have to keep doing this.
We're going to have to do our best here.
So the moon tea thing, boy, that is a great callback to mm-hmm. Rhaenyra and her father and
yep.
you know Crispin Cookies Cole, and that just that setup is so good, and the fact that she has to do that for her son, like you mm-hmm. said, the hypocrisy.
Yeah, the hypocrisy is almost unbearable.
Yeah,
because he's. Like, at least Rhaenyra's consenting with everybody, right? Like, she's getting consent from everyone. The horrific acts of Aegon should obviously have been a disqualifier for him being king. He's not fit to do it. He doesn't even want to do it.
Right.
Why are we doing yeah. this?
Right.
Why
right.
are we doing this?
Because of some silly belief that the firstborn male mm-hmm. child has to be the, you know, the lineage. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really
this idea that Alicent has been seated by her father, mm-hmm. which is if Rhaenyra takes power, she'll have to cut off all competing claims and therefore kill your kids.
Which doesn't have to be.
Right. And I don't think Rhaenyra would ever do that.
I don't think so. I don't think she would. I don't think she would have. She would do that. She might banish them to some far castle keeper or something like that. But I don't think she would. Yeah, I don't think she would.
I think she would have given them places at her court. I really do.
Well, and she proposed the marriage, right? So
Right. Helena could have been queen anyway.
Yeah.
Well, it is what it is, I guess. Rhaenyra accuses Rhaenys of coming to King's Landing on her own behalf and offers a marriage alliance to win her support. The lords gather in court to hear the petition of Vaemond Valerion. When Rhaenyra begins her response, Viserys enters to sit the throne for the first time in years. He reaffirms Lucerys as his heir to Driftmark on the advice of Rhaenys, who publicly accepts Rhaenyra's proposal for marriages between their lines. Vaemond shouts that Rhaenyra's children are bastards and that she is a whore. His delivery was great.
It was so good.
Viserys rises to cut out Vaemond's tongue, but Daemon partially decapitates Vaemond, killing him and letting him keep his tongue.
Dark sister is sharp.
It sure is. I do love the line, he can keep his tongue. And,
yeah.
and it's sticking out like venom in Spider-Man.
Pretty gross. And then what Otto says, seize him or disarm him or something like that. And Damon's just like, come on, you fools. Like, mm-hmm. you may, you know, all of you might get me, but a number of you are going to be extremely wounded, if not dead. So don't even think it.
Also, I'm the king's brother. You might want to back off for a
exactly.
minute.
Exactly. Which is great.
And he's future king consort.
Further divides, you know, further setting up even more divisions within the Kingsguard, because Harold Westerling versus Criston Cole versus Eric, you know, like all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. Like when somebody gives you an order, who, you know, do you recognize the legitimacy of that order? You know, based on, mm-hmm. you know, who gives it to you. So this idea that they're all like conflicted when the Kingsguard should be pure and clean and straightforward about who they serve, the king, right? Mm-hmm. So
yep.
it's great fodder for this crazy succession story.
So let's talk about this Rhaenys business, because
yes,
this was something you brought
business.
Up before.
Yeah.
To me, I mean, her priority, I think, was making sure it went to her actual grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this was the way she does it, right? Because now it will go to Bela and Rhaena and their kids, and there will continue to be Valerian blood at Driftmark.
So I think what was interesting was when she, when they leave that conversation, she says, I stand alone, right? I don't want to get caught up between the Hightowers and the Targaryens. And so, you know, as cool as your offer for marriage is, if I'm staring down at Alicent and Otto, I'm not going to win. That's going to, I'm going to get caught up in your, you know, in what they're trying to do to you. So I'm going to try and stay out of it. But then when Viserys shows up, it changes the power dynamic. Uh-huh. And so she accepts the marriage proposal in the moment.
Yep.
So, and that surprises Rhaenyra. She's like, okay. I guess we're allies now, even though, you know, Rhaenys is not, she doesn't really have a lot of love for Rhaenyra and Daemon, given that she thinks that they killed his son, her son. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just amazing. But yeah, the fact that she changed in that moment because Viserys showed up, I think that's really interesting.
Yes, and this whole situation was really tricky because they do mention at one point that Corlys never did the paperwork, right? He never officially named Lucerys as his
Did you get that
heir.
Stamped in the carbon copies with the notary public stamp?
Right. It was just known that he wanted Lucerys to be his heir to Driftmark. Mm-hmm. And the only reason that Lucerys would get it instead of Jacerys by default would be because Jacerys is supposed to be king. So you ought to, so he's skipping,
right.
he's skipping a
down.
Line.
Right.
But that's not happening until, I mean, like, I guess it would eventually, but it's not happening until Corlys makes that official. But those were obviously his wishes. Like, everybody knew this. He was super, he was like, Lucerys, one day this will all be yours.
Right. In
and
public.
He takes him up into the great wait. Glass elevator, mm-hmm. and he shows him all of the Wonka factory. And he says, my boy, you've won
the golden ticket.
Mm-hmm. You've won this really gray island where we have nighttime suns.
Yep. And yeah, it's that she had to vouch and validate that. And then mm-hmm. I love Viserys is like, well, okay, I guess I've, you know, I reaffirm my original decision because y'all obviously were not listening. So
mm-hmm. did I stutter? He says,
did I?
The Phantom of the Opera has some bite to him.
He does. He really does. That mask, boy, the whole, and just, yeah, like we were saying before, his performance of being not only older, but crippled by this wasting disease that he has. Mm-hmm. It would be so easy to fail in act, you know, for the actor. This is a very hard role for an actor to achieve, and he does it. It feels flawless. It feels easy for him what he's doing, but it's not in any way, shape, or form. It's really a masterful performance.
Absolutely. Viserys hosts a feast for his extended family, revealing his decomposing face and pleading with the family to unite and stop dividing the House of the Dragon. Rhaenyra toasts Alicent and apologizes, leading many at the table to exchange similar sentiments. I separated out the good from the bad in this outline.
Okay. Because once the kids get involved, it gets ugly mm-hmm. fast. yeah. And so Viserys's speech, while it hits the first generation pretty well, it's the second generation, right? The grandkids are just like, whatever, old man. And you just feel the... But then you look at Rhaenyra or Alicent, and you can see that they're like, yeah, he's right, and we really should, and wouldn't it be nice if... And then the snot-nosed kids get involved and blow it all up.
Yep. Those kids just can't stop arguing, huh?
No, and was it... Do you think it... I mean, Aegon was really egging on Jaehaerys... But it was when the pig showed up, when Luke gave the stink eye when the pig showed up. I think that's really when you know at Aemond. I think that's really when it boils over.
Yes, I agree with that. And Luke didn't need to do that.
No, it was too late though. That thing has been in the oven all day. Right, it's coming.
But I got the sense that Luke or one of the Valyrians said to the servants, like, put that right in front of Aemon.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. They were under orders. They knew exactly where that was going.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a funny little gag too. Like if it were not for the bad blood, if that was just like, hey, Uncle Aha, and they, oh, that's funny, nephew.
Especially because now he has a dragon. Like now he has the dragon that everybody wanted.
Yeah.
Guy's just insecure. Aemon is just so insecure. And the actor for Aemon, now I got to go to my sunrise and figure out who the actor is. But the actor for Aemon, who is Ewan Mitchell.
Yep.
Has this smirk, this perpetual smirk that yes, just makes does. You want to punch him in the face all the right. time.
Yeah.
He's so good at it. So, so, so good at it.
And he's a deadly fighter, right? He's mm-hmm. he is not somebody to be trifled with.
Yep.
Except when Daemon stares him down, which mm-hmm. is a great scene. He's just like, don't try it, kid. You're tough, but you're not that tough. You're not that guy.
Right, right. I'm still Daemon Targaryen. I'm still the guy who just sliced somebody's head open in open court.
Right. I'm the one who took down the crab feeder. The
crab feeder, yep. Yep.
So
just one more thing on the good before we dive.
No, right. Sorry, we've already slid into the bad, right? We couldn't help it. Good.
I really love Rhaenyra's toast. It felt so genuine.
Yeah, yeah.
And agreed. He really sold me. Like Alicent mm-hmm. and Rhaenyra really sold me on these were supposed to be best friends for life.
Yeah, yeah.
And they screwed it up. But you know what? Maybe we could get back to something good. And it makes you wonder what could have been, right?
Mm-hmm.
Had circumstances been just a little bit different. Had one misstep not stepped. Had right. one miss not stepped. Had one step not missed.
If she hadn't been so insistent in getting the kids back to Dragonstone, if they just stayed, maybe kept the kids separate, but like, yeah.
Oh, I think that would have been bad.
You think so? Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Because
I was just
what's
going to
happen is, well, think about what happens next episode. They imprison everybody who's not in their cause. And right. Allison still would have gotten first word.
But that's after the dragon incident. Right? Well,
but Allison
still, I don't know. I have to... I can't remember what happens in 9, so I don't think we should litigate it.
What I'm saying is,
yeah,
Allison in this episode is the first one to find out that Viserys is dead. If Rhaenyra and her kids slept over, they're sleeping, and Allison has time to orchestrate everyone getting captured.
Yeah, yeah.
Allison would have gotten that like fake naming of Aegon as the heir too.
Right.
So I think it would have been even worse for Rhaenyra. I think they would have ended the claim before it began.
Which is fair given the circumstances, because I didn't have all the circumstances lined up. I was just thinking of like if these two women could just have a moment of peace without mm-hmm. Otto and without Aegon and, you know.
Yeah, I hear that.
You know, if these two could just go on a retreat, get a VRBO, go to the Kingswood, something, get a few bottles and then hash it all out. You know, they could really take control of the situation, but instead all the other actors and players are spinning it, you know, spinning things out of control faster than they can, you know, regain that old trust and love for each other.
Yeah. It's sad, but the problem is this is too little too late.
Exactly. That's true. That's a very good point.
And at this point, even if they drank all night and had a great time, Alicent goes to Viserys' room, hears, oh, Aegon, right. And all of a sudden they're separate again because she has a goal that's incompatible with being friends with Rhaenyra.
And Aemon and Luke are still going to have their beef mm-hmm. No matter what. And yeah, everybody's going to have, you know, thoughts about Daemon. Yeah, like nothing else would have changed. So
right.
I was just, you know, wistfully, you know, hoping that these two could
we were trying
get
to do
together.
Marvel's What If, but
yes, exactly.
Game of Thrones, What If?
That's a good, hey, Marvel, call us.
I would do a what if Rhaegar survived the, what if Rhaegar won in the battle with Robert?
I know enough about that. I don't know if I know the details of that.
Robert's rebellion and,
right.
and Rhaegar was the heir to the throne after Aerys the Mad King. Anyway, write in if you want to hear something like that too. As the night goes on, the younger Targaryens and Valyrians get annoyed with each other. Aegon disrespects Baela, and Jace responds by dancing with Helaena.
Which is after
after Viserys goes to bed, Aemon toasts his strong nephews, inciting a fight. Rhaenyra decides to take the kids to Dragonstone and return soon on dragon.
What a great little the strong. Oh, my strong nephews. Just so naughty.
I'm complimenting
so
them.
Naughty. And then dancing with Helena, that was a really great. And they were actually really having a fun time. Like I
know.
Kind of got a vibe that they would, you know, enjoy each other's company. Not
Helena
in a,
deserves better.
She does.
And the line she gives of like marriage isn't so bad. He doesn't really pay much attention to you except when he's drunk. Oh God.
So cringe.
That's awful.
Oh. She does not know how to read the room.
And like Otto's chuckling at this, and I'm like, that's your granddaughter, bro.
Yeah.
Just ick.
And then he's watching Alicent and Rhaenyra try to reforge their bonds, he must be like, oh shit. Like,
right,
I don't want
this
to be
something's
happening.
Going wrong here.
Yeah. Because they're finding their old friendship. So
don't let them sit too close to each other.
Mm-mm.
Alicent returns to Viserys' side, where he mumbles about Aegon's dream, mistakenly believing Alicent to be Rhaenyra. She misunderstands and thinks he's expressing a desire for their son Aegon to be king. Viserys dies that night, seeing his love.
So sad, and I think they ended this episode really well.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, a simple fade to black, you know, and just seeing Paddy Considine just, you know, in this epic role. It was just a really nice way to bring Viserys to an end and to bring, you know, Paddy Considine to an end. It was, really sublime.
And of course, he's seeing Aemma at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of and course. She's like, you did what to me? You let them cut me open?
Yeah.
Bastard.
And of course, Alicent has the fuel she needs for her fire.
Yeah, so this is something else I wanted to bring up, because I was remembering it as he's like, Aegon is the answer, blah, blah, blah. But then I'm rewatching it, and I'm like, it's pretty clear that he's not talking about Aegon. He says Aegon the Conqueror.
Yeah, yeah.
He says that. He doesn't say Aegon, our son. He doesn't say, you know, our Aegon or anything like that. I think really... Alicent is massaging it in her head to be what she wants to hear.
Completely. Completely. She's very much bending the facts to hear what she was. She's like, she's trying to make it out. She's trying to get clarity, but she's less concerned with the truth than what she, what her impulses are driving her towards.
Right. She uses truth and honor as these excuses.
Right.
But, you know, I think Rhaenyra has a point where she goes, now they see you as you are. Mm-hmm. Is like, really, they're just excuses to do violence undercover.
It hurt people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what we say?
Very sad. Very sad. Anyway, plenty of conversation to have for season two.
We're here for the tragedy.
We're here for the tragedy. I'm so excited for season two. I think it's going to be insane. I think I'm going to cry a lot, and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. So let's go into our feedback. Of course, you can write into HotD, HOTD, at thelorehounds.com, or you can head to the contact page on our website. You could go on our Discord and tag us, whatever you want to do. Any way you can get it to us. You can tweet at us. We're back on Twitter. We only had one piece of feedback this week, which is surprising because we were getting a decent amount going before this. But Dork of the Ninjas, Michael, he's always here with us on his voicemails, and he's called in to be on the pod again. Here we go. And he's going to call me out too. I listened to it already.
Okay.
Hey guys, just want to get started with a couple corrections as well as also just some thoughts on the episodes 7 and 8 of House of Dragons Season 1. I hate to be that guy with the corrections, but hey. John, just a quick note. You said that Balerion, the dragon that Viserys had rode before, that he was a constant rider. He wasn't, actually. He rode him once.
That's
basically
what I thought.
It was Balerion was an old, old dragon to the point where he was not really wanting to be ridden by anybody, but Viserys rode him one time, basically, did like a 30-minute flight, if that, landed back down, and never rode a dragon again a day in his life. And also, Valyrian was the biggest dragon that the Targaryens had at that time, and was until its death, and then at that point, Valyrian took over that title. So, just a little bit on that, but my big thing, what I wanted to talk about, of course, was the episodes 7 and 8 is... I think these are two of the best episodes of the series, in my opinion, so far, if not the best period. Because we, of course, had the episode, I agree that episode 4 was kind of like the, hey, this is the point of no return, the war is going to happen, this is just the kicking off point. This is the two episodes that set up the biggest consequences, of course, with the... dragon being stolen from the mother as soon as she's dead, basically, at the funeral. And, well, not stolen, but you know. And then after that, of course, that the whole war, I think the last key point of the possibility of the war being stopped was ended the second that Viserys at that moment had the miscommunication with Alicent, and she was convinced, oh, he wants his son on the throne, not his daughter. It's one of the best type of misunderstandings that doesn't feel like, oh, she just wants war, period. It feels like she genuinely thought, okay, maybe this is just how it's going to be. And in that moment, I heard this, and it's just conviction, and I agree with John's statement of she is a hall monitor, she has to go by the rules. His quote, rules were the last things he was told her, that is that he wanted his son on the throne, Aegon on the throne. It's a very interesting thing of, like, that is a thing that's completely added for the show that's not in the original book, but it is just, I think, the perfect detail of, like, sometimes just the wrong said thing at the wrong said time can change world history, and I think that's a perfect example of that. Love the show. Like, looking forward to your coverage of season 2, and can't wait to hear from y'all.
I think I totally agree with you, Michael, on this, that this... that she has to, you know, she's taking this information and she's like, well, that's what the king said. Mm-hmm. And she's bending it so hard that way. And it just really points to her hypocrisy. But yet, if she had stopped and checked in with reality, never once ever in all of this time that she's been married to him, has he ever said anything other than, Rhaenyra is the heir, and affirmed multiple times. And it's like, what you're? Oh, the dying ramblings of the ramblings of a dying man. This is what you're going to use as your evidence. But she does. She takes it and runs with it.
Right. But next episode, when she tells her dad about it, he's like, "Oh, I'm going to use this so bad. This is going to be so good." He's ready for it. He's like, "Well, then you have to honor that wish," but. To be kind to be generous to Alicent, Viserys was talking all day about setting things right. I want my mind clear. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of see why she would think he would be making a big change.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, this was incorrect, but we have more information as the viewers than she has.
Right. But, and she has the lens at which she views things and her own, right. She's biased in a mm-hmm. lot of ways. So she uses it.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Michael. And thanks for the corrections. I did look up Valyrian stuff after the podcast and I was like, well, that's wrong, but I'm sure somebody will write in and write in. You did, or call in. You did, Michael.
Well, we always appreciate the corrections too, because it's such definitely. A vast world that it's so hard to hold it all into place. We're not like the comic book nerd in the Simpsons show, right, where I forget his name. Anyway,
you can't expect me to keep JRR and GRR together in my head
and
all the time.
Yeah, and the X-Men.
And the X-Men. I'm doing Doctor Who right now. Oh my goodness. There's a lot of worlds in my head right now.
The thing about the dragon tune and about Viserys writing it, I thought I remembered that he said when he was talking with her down in the crypt, like, you know, he wrote it once and it was like, that's enough for me. Thanks, y'all.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so, and I think that goes into his sense of using dragons and the power of dragons, because he was never really a dragon rider as such. Like,
right,
I've skied, I am not a skier. Right. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he rode a dragon, but he's not a dragon rider.
Right. Well, thanks again for calling in, Michael. This has been a fun couple episodes. These episodes got me really hyped for season two, because the writing here is just A++.
Phenomenal.
This was the best writing they did all season, I think.
Yeah. And then the next two episodes are just spectacle and feast for turning up the heat for next season.
Yeah, I'm almost surprised that they didn't do these as a double feature, like all in one night, make it like a 2-hour finale.
Mm.
But it's cool that they divided it too.
Was it, I think episode 8 was hour 15 or something
Yeah,
it was longer. It was extra long. Yeah. But, you know, Patty needed it, right? I think we needed it. It took 3 minutes for him just to walk up to the throne, so of runtime.
Well, give yourself a patty on the back. We've gotten through the entire Viserys run.
Good thing we're at the outro.
All right. Speaking of outros, I'm going to give you our weekly show notes, because I've decided to limit things so that you all don't tune out after 30 seconds. Because
otherwise we just talk for another 20 minutes.
We're not talking about every project we've ever done or will do anymore. Here we go. Weekly show notes. On this feed, you already have an episode of Doctor Who, season 1, episode 4, Boom. It was a lot of fun. Stephen Moffat's back on the show, writing under showrunner Russell T. Davies. It's the dream team. They're back. And Shuti Gatwa is doing an amazing job. You'll also get, if you're a patron, you'll get second breakfast. We're going to talk about not having breakfast, skipping breakfast. And if we have time, we're going to do Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. But we have plans. We're going to cover the movie, but we got to see what we're doing with it. So stay tuned for that on second breakfast. It's our first one with Alicia, so definitely tune in. Rings and Rituals is going to be back next week with Chapter 6 on Episode 6, Udun from the Rings of Power, a fan favorite. I think that podcast, David, on Udun was our top downloaded podcast ever, which is funny. The Complete Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, which is a mouthful, with Alicia, is doing two podcasts this week on the High Republic era and the Star Wars Eclipse game preview. A lot of fun stuff over there. You got to listen to the High Republic stuff to get the context for the Acolyte, which I'm going to be covering with Alicia over on that feed. Radioactive Ramblings is doing their Fallout lore series. Aaron's back with a new co-host. They're covering the rise of the New California Republic into this week's episode. And Properly Howard Movie Review is back on their Felonies and Fugazis train with Gross Point Blank. Have you listened to this yet, David?
Yeah, it was a really good episode. And I wish my watching schedule wasn't so full, because I really want to go watch the movie now. But Steve was hilarious. He was on point. He had this great line. What was it? Something about Algebra 2 being the worst sequel ever. You know, we're talking about math class in high school.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a really good episode. Strong episode.
Nice. Wolf Shift Dust is off this week, but we'll be back next week with Beacon 23, episodes 7 and 8 of season 2, which is the finale. All right, David.
Oh,
we've got one more thing to do. We've got to talk about our Patreon and Supercast, and then we've got to do our thank you. So tell me about Patreon, Supercast.
Supercast is like Patreon, but it's better built for podcasters. So if you're thinking about subscribing and supporting the community, check in on Supercast first. It's exactly the same as Patreon in terms of tiers and levels. Same thing in terms of getting an annual membership, which we give you a nice discount on, or doing a monthly subscription. So if you're considering supporting what we do and how we do it, head to Supercast. If you're already in the Patreon ecosystem and it's just easier, then do it there. But they're functionally the same. But we just get a better, we get a little bit better performance out of Supercast. It's more built for podcasters. So I guess that's that.
Also, I'll add, if you're on Patreon and you're Supercast curious,
yes,
there is a tool that will migrate your Patreon subscriptions, which means you will get credited for the remainder on your subscription. So if you're in a partial month or a partial year subscription, you can change the Supercast without like a financial hit.
Exactly. And if you need any help with that, just let us know and we'll be happy to hold your hand doing that.
Yep.
What else we got? The Discord. The Discord is a great place to hang out. You know, I was reading and there's this idea that's out and around right now. There's a lot of conversation about algorithms and, you know, algorithmic driven content. And, you know, Facebook is sort of becoming dead internet because it's just bots talking to bots at some stage. And this idea that when we want to connect with other movie and TV fans and we want to kind of a fun water cooler place. I don't talk about House of the Dragon with my spouse. You know, I come onto the Discord to talk about it. And the Discord is a place where you can, you know, meet up with other members of the community and we can just chat and nerd out, tell each other about the shows that we're watching, because there's so much content out there. It's hard to keep track of it. So it's great. We have a whole community of people who are like, oh, did you see this show? Did you see that show? Oh yeah, it was really good. You should check it out. Okay, cool. Right. So we actually have a human living community, and the place to interact with that is on the Discord. So join us over there. We've got a great moderator team. We have projects. We have all kinds of different projects. We have different channels for all of those different things. So big shout out to the mod team too. We just did a big server reorganization. I hope people are enjoying it. I can't quite tell yet, but yeah, it's a cool place.
All right.
People.
Very cool. I'm going to do our thank yous because I never get to do them anymore. You and Alicia have been doing them for me.
Oh, well, please, by all means.
Discord server boosters. Gnarls? Aaron K. Tiller the Thriller. Dork of the Ninjas. Doove 71. Captain Gingy 56, who's also co-hosting with Aaron on Fallout Lore.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think he might go by Richard W. as well. I couldn't tell. His name kept changing. But anyway, thank you.
He's elusive.
Yes, the elusive Captain Gingy.
Samartian is our first lore master, because I didn't say what I'm about to introduce. Lore masters are Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, Nick W, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Doove 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, DJ Miwa, Andra B, Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Aaron T, Sub-Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, and Adrian. Thank you, everyone, for all of your support. It really does help us keep doing these rewatch podcasts. This is our first rewatch podcast we've done, I think.
This is exciting. Is it? Yeah, I think you're right.
So thank you. Thank you. It's a big help, everyone. I also want to add, it's a joy getting to hear Alicia do this list, because it was getting a little old, just you and me doing gnarls. And now I get to hear her different gnarls impressions. It's great.
Fun.
All right, everyone. It's been fun. Let's talk Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon next week.
See you then.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Nicole, did you ever notice how The Sign by Ace of Base has really strange key changes?
I did not, Mark. I'm a real person.
Well, let me tell you about it. I'll let you talk about neuroscience gobbledygook.
Yes, I thought you'd never ask.
This is the Nevermind the Music podcast,
where one psychologist
and one musician
deep dive into the songs you love,
so you don't have to.
And there's plenty of time to get off topic.
From Semi-Charmed Life to The Way You Move.
And who could forget The Crossroads?
Is it The Crossroads or The Crossroads?
Save it for the episode, Mark.
Listen to Nevermind the Music
wherever you get your podcasts.